What's going on, everybody? We are amped up, to use the words of my co-host today, Mike Lacusta. We're amped up to talk golf cards, right, brother?
Absolutely.
All right, before we jump into the golf card talk, we're gonna talk about Graybo's. Graybo's Sports Cards is a local hobby shop owned by Gray Burnett, Ryan Fitz, Duke, Denny One-Time Dodson, and they're located in the Arts District of Richmond, Virginia. Graybo's sports the best selection of raw and graded singles in the Mid-Atlantic and a wide variety of wax. Listeners of the Sports Card Strategy Show can receive a 10% discount on any purchase at graybos.co by entering the code STRATEGY2023. Graybo's also breaks on the Drip app 5 nights a week, including baseball, basketball, football, and even wrestling. I think we need to get some golf in there, Mike. We need to get them maybe breaking some golf.
Heck yeah.
If you use the link in their IG bio at Graybo's underscore cards, you can get a $15 credit after your first purchase on Drip. Don't forget, again, to buy something on their website, graybos.co, using the promo code STRATEGY2023. I'm going to be at Graybo's tomorrow, but so I leave my flights in a few hours here. So Mike and I are going to talk golf cards. There's a lot going on in the golf world since we last talked. So
you're telling me.
Like, run us through here, and then I'm going to pack up all of my recording equipment. My studio is going to go with me to Graybo's in my big suitcase for tomorrow's shows from Richmond, Virginia, so I'm pumped about that. And Evan Bell's in the house. He's in Virginia, so I think I might see him. He might try to stop by Graybo's. It'd be great to see you, Evan.
Well, as Paul, as you said, I'm pumped up, and it has to do with golf, but just as much as my family. I got a baby coming on Monday, so that's 3 days from now. We're going to be pretty chaotic next week. So I'm glad we could fit this episode in, episode 8, I think it is. I'm going to run through, some of the topics we're going to talk about, because I think this might be a condensed episode. So there's three exciting things going on these days in golf. Firstly, last week was the Canadian Open. Then we get into some of the drama between the LIV PIF and the PGA. And then lastly, the U.S. Open is this weekend. So those are three kind of quick topics we'll hit on before we get into the main topic of the day, which is it's a theme that Paul threw at me. I don't know if I'm necessarily the best person to kind of create this list. So I'm going to run through the top five ways to make money with golf cards. Now, I think I'm qualified to write this list, but my mindset is a little bit different than, you know, some of you sports card investors. I come from a collector background, so I see shiny things and I want to buy them, and I don't have good reasons all the time. So I think this might even be, I don't know, I never threw this by you, Paul, before, but maybe we'll do a two-part thing. Maybe we'll give my top five ways to make money with golf cards, and then maybe you can, you know, throw together your top five ways.
Yeah, that sounds great, man. That sounds great. And there's always a good balance between collecting and investing. That's one thing I've learned, is that, you know, they go hand in hand. A lot of times you're making plays to fund your PC. I'm talking about making plays to fund my life, and everybody's kind of doing their own thing. And I think even if you're more of a collector, I think you're most of the time, what I've learned is even collectors flip. So, but yeah, I do challenge everyone that I create content with to kind of think about how it can, like, how what we talk about on the show can help people make money. But anyway, a lot to get to. This is more Mike's show than it is mine. So
what, Mike, we're going to do, Paul, is I'm going to jump into each topic, and then I'll give you a chance to kind of respond. So we'll start off with, oh, Canada, glorious and free. Paul, did you watch any of the Canadian Open?
I did not.
Did you hear at all what happened? Oh my God.
I'm learning everything from you right now. It already ended.
Our listeners are cringing in their seats, in their car seats, as they commute home on a Friday afternoon. So the Canadian Open has been won, or hasn't been won by a Canadian in 69 years. So it's been dominated by Americans, and Rory for the last two Canadian Opens, he was actually a back-to-back winner. And coming down the stretch on Sunday, it was a bit of a showdown between Mr. Tommy Fleetwood of England and Nick Taylor of Canada. Nick Taylor's a guy we've talked a little bit about. He has cards in Upper Deck Artifacts 2021. So he and Adam Hadwin are the two key Canadians in the set. And I'll be honest, I was a bit more of an Adam Hadwin fan in the past. Both of them actually grew up in Abbotsford, which is half an hour from where I grew up in BC on the West Coast. And I actually have family, friends that are, you know, friends with both of those professional athletes. So anyways, they both had good showings. But down the stretch, Nick Taylor he wasn't in the last group. So he posted a score of minus, I think it was 17. And that involved a pretty tickly birdie on 18 at the end. I think it was a good probably 15 footer or so that broke like 3 or 4 feet. So it was a pretty gnarly putt he made at the end to post a score in the clubhouse. Tommy Fleetwood came roaring down, 16 birdie, 17 birdie to tie Nick Taylor. The 18 was a par five. So I'm sitting there thinking, Tommy Fleetwood's tied, one hole to play. It's a par five. It's actually the easiest hole on the course that day. It's an automatic birdie. He's going to get it. But to create a bit of drama, he drove it into the rough. And then, so we were kind of on the edge of our seat, and his second shot was abysmal. Just, I literally think he topped it, and it like, he did like a top slice, ended up in thick rough on like a 45 degree slant, like away from the fairway. And so he had to like make a crazy up and down just to get par and force a playoff. Four round playoff, which was capstoned on 18 with a 72 foot putt by Nick Taylor. And he rammed it in for eagle to win the Canadian Open. The crowd went wild. It's the only time in my life I ever wished I was in Toronto. It was unbelievable. And actually the commentary, I think after when he made the putt, whoever the commentator is, Jim Nance or whatever, said, "Oh, Canada, glorious and free." And it was like, I'm sure he had it scripted, but it seemed pretty impromptu. So Nick Taylor is suddenly a national hero. I think it's the second biggest win in Canadian golf history. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm forgetting about something, but Mike Weir winning the 2001 or 2003 Masters, which is a huge win, the Masters. But second to that, I would say Nick Taylor bringing home the Canadian Open for the first time the Canadians have held the cup in 69 years. The crowd went wild. He rammed it in with that putt. So Adam Hadwin, the other guy I love, has a bottle of champagne on the sidelines. And when the putt went in, the crowd went crazy. All the biggest Canadian golfers like Mike Weir, Adam Hadwin, Svensson, all of them were standing by. And they just they all ran onto the green to celebrate. And Adam's holding the champagne. He shakes it up and goes to spray it on Nick. And he just gets tackled by like linebacker's security guard. And Adam Hadwin's playing in the U.S. Open this weekend. Like, he gets full-on tackled. So we had about 4 or 5 hours before we got an update on Twitter that he's okay, of worrying, like, is Adam going to be playing this weekend?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. That is so cool.
So, Paul, I know we want to keep this quick, but I'll talk very briefly about Nick's cards. So, Man, I am kicking myself. I was looking at – so I'm checking out – I'm on ComC, and I've got – 40, 50 cards in my ComC account that I want to eventually ship home. And I was planning on doing this soon so that I can eventually grade some of them and add the rest to my PC. And so I was surfing through cards that seemed like good deals that I might make a quick purchase because I don't have to pay for shipping, just add it into my bulk shipment home. And I was looking at this Nick Taylor card. It was a 2021 Upper Deck SP Authentic rookie patch auto, on card auto, numbered out of 100. It's a horizontal version, and it was listed for $9 US. I actually had one of these cards before. I sold it for I bought it for $11 and I sold it later on, and that's the card there. There was like 5 or 6 of them posted on ComC. Nobody was interested in them, and I threw the guy out an offer on ComC for $5. It was listed for $9, and the guy just rejected it. No counter offer, no nothing. I thought, ah, it's not meant to be. Like 3 days later, he wins the Canadian Open and these cards are selling for like 40, 50 bucks.
Yeah, this one 56 US, 75 Canadian. So yeah, a lot of Nick Taylor sales on June 11th, that's for sure.
And I was definitely scrolling and I couldn't bring myself to buy any of them for, you know, 4 or 5X of what they were just selling for recently. And I told you before I had been doing some sales around the Masters and I made money on most of the cards I sold, like a nice Patrick Cantlay rookie auto, a handful of others. One guy who bought the Patrick Cantlay asked, you know, would you mind throwing in your Nick Taylor autos for an extra $30 Canadian? So that's like $20 to $24 US. I said, sure. And I had this rookie patch auto out of 100. I had the other one, the third one in the, that you're showing on the screen, which is just his like base SP Authentic rookie auto. And then like two other, like another patch auto from Artifacts. And then like just a base auto from Artifacts. Man, what was that? 20, let's call it $22 US I got for those four cards. They're easily selling for over 100 today total.
Yeah. Interesting that like some of these are still like even on June 11th, we're still pretty inexpensive. I guess just like
that's because
it depends on the card, right?
No, it's because those were buy it nows. And so those ones were listed before June 11th. So all of the existing listings for $5, $8, those all got snapped up like as he was in the playoff. So if you were to go to the current listings, anything you see is going to be kind of pricey.
I see. Yep. These are all sold. So yeah, people, interesting move. You can go, you could do that as a play, everybody, you know, see who's leading in the final round. See if anyone has not updated their buy it now listings and maybe they've got them there for still a super cheap price. Mike just talked about how he almost pulled trigger on a COMC one. That's interesting. I think it's hard to predict the winner of a tournament going into a tournament because you've got so many golfers and, anything can happen on any given day. And so that's very, very hard to predict the winner, but this could be a strategy, right? I mean, have we talked about this? Do you do this where you're
Yeah, this is definitely a thing. I mean, I'm so busy. And I would say most people are in my boat where, you know, you might be able to tune in and watch a tournament on a Sunday, but and if you do, you might flip through your phone and make a deal. But I mean, it might make more sense for higher dollar cards if you're actually going to like focus in on it, but for like a $5 card to turn it into a $20 card, that's what you want to do at scale to make a living at this. But just with the family and everything going on, I just haven't had time to do it.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I will say that, I do sneak away to the bathroom from time to time.
Stealing words from me.
I didn't want to like put you in a spot there, but I think most of us who are in relationships, especially on the weekends or at nights, need to decompress a little bit and we go to eBay or we go to MySlabs or COMC or whatever on our phone and we're trying to make some deals. So, could be a play. That's interesting. All right, Mike, good stuff.
Let's get into LIV PGA PIF drama. So for those of you who don't know what PIF stands for, it is the Public Investment Firm of Saudi Arabia. So this is obviously controlled by, you know, the prince or whatever. I don't know those guys' names, but the PGA commissioner, Jay Monahan, called up the owner of the like umbrella company, PIF, that owns LIV and said, hey, let's talk. 2 weeks later, he makes a big announcement on the day before the Canadian Open. And in his announcement, it was done through CNBC or something like that. He and then this owner of the PIF announce that they've merged. And the details essentially are that the PIF, the Public Investment Firm of Saudi Arabia, has, for lack of a better word, bought the PGA Tour. They said they've invested. They won't say how much, but it's going to be a considerable amount of money. They're going to have control over the PGA Tour. They're completely canceling all the lawsuits going on between LIV and the PGA Tour. And they have said in a roundabout way that LIV players are going to be eventually allowed to kind of commingle on PGA events. Whether Liv stays alive, I have no idea why it would stay alive. It's a huge money pit to run these tournaments. There are not big investment firms that have purchased up these Liv teams, because that's really the way it's sort of a franchise model. If somebody could own the four aces, Dustin Johnson's team, and you know, turn it into a $500 million a year business through sponsorships, tickets, whatever the hell they do, then maybe the Liv format could make sense. But currently, they're not making anything. So in terms of cards, I mean, I could go on and on about the drama, the consequences, whether this is good, bad, ethics, whatever. The one thing I will say is Jay Monahan is a complete hypocrite. It's unbelievable. Last year, for the last 2 years, he's been standing on his soapbox preaching. He even brought in the 9/11 families, people who died from these terrorist attacks, saying, how could you guys do business with Saudi Arabia? The way they treat women, their human, whatever. He just, that was his position, and he nailed that position and took a complete 180, completely stands up for them now. The only other piece of information I'll share is a week later, there was an emergency alert that came across my screen on the PGA event, and it said Jay Monahan has had a medical emergency and is stepping away from his duties at this time, and we will receive updates like as his family shares them. So I don't know if this guy had a heart attack, if he's playing sick. I don't know what the deal is. I mean, if he's in a true medical emergency, I wish him well. I could never want somebody to have significant health problems, but the guy is a hypocrite, and maybe he's just fallen under the stress. I don't know.
Yeah, it's that was my reaction as well. I was actually golfing with my parents, and I think we were making the turn, or we had just finished, and I saw on the screen that that was the news, and I was shocked, and I immediately thought that's a hypocrite. Like that's nothing but a hypocritical move to do what he did. And and then as the details have rolled out, I mean, that's kind of seems to have been everyone's reaction. I was also pretty floored by the fact that none of the golfers knew about it on the PGA Tour. Like it was just announced, and just, you know, pretty crappy. So let's get to, I'm going to throw out some data because, and then we'll get to your take on the cards, like what this could potentially do for cards. So the reason I say this is because every once in a while I get an email from a PR guy out of Denmark who sends me like stats from like research that they do. And so I thought this was interesting. And the only reason that I kept it is because I knew we were going to talk about it on the show. So apparently this company worked with Vegas Insider to conduct a survey to analyze public sentiment around the PGA Live merger. They asked 4,000 sports fans across the U.S. Sorry, they didn't include Canada, Mike. If they think the PGA Tour pros that turned down Live should get compensated following the merger, as the pros declined a significant financial boost by joining the Saudi-backed league. The survey found that more than half, 51% of American sports fans believe the professional golfers who turned down the Live should get compensation following the merger. 29% of sports fans do not think compensation is in order, and 20% didn't have an opinion. 55% of male sports fans think that the golfer should get compensated. Female respondents said that 45% of female fans don't think the player should be compensated. Basically, you know, not sure what your take is on this, or if they've made any kind of indication as to what would happen. But that was one of the first things I thought about, is like, mm-hmm. You're Rory, you got screwed. If you're Brooks Koepka, and this is not this, I'm not the only one who has had this take in the aftermath. This is just the first time I've talked about it with anybody. If you're Brooks Koepka, I think you're feeling probably pretty darn good about yourself. Are they going to, you said you used the word intermingle. What details have they released about like what's actually going to happen related to any of this? And what's your take before we get into the cards part?
So first of all, PGA LIV merger is actually a bit misleading. The PGA and the LIV are still completely independent organizations that are completely unaffiliated other than sharing a common investor. So PIF is the one who's merged with the PGA Tour. PIF owns LIV Tour completely. And PIF owns some unknown amount of the PGA Tour.
Okay.
So I completely share your take. I think Rory is the was the poster boy for the PGA Tour. He was standing up for what he believed in, and he, you know, he in his press conference, you could tell he was totally deflated. He talked at length with Jay Monahan that morning, and Jay kind of convinced him that it's good for the greater game across the world to have a single platform for golf, to have all this money invested into it. You know, at the end of the day, it might make the viewing experience better, the compensation for the athletes better. It might create better stages for the best players in the world to play against each other more frequently. So there could be a lot of benefits if you ignore the hypocrisy and the ethics involved and the fact that, you know, the Middle East is essentially going to have control over the sport that we all love. That's been a United States-based program for so many years. I think that they should be compensated. They took that stance because the PGA Tour specifically said, if you walk the line and take one step over, we're going to fine you. We're going to take away your card. You're not going to be, you know, and they tugged at their ethics, saying, this is blood money. These people are cutting reporters' heads off. They're imprisoning women and people for lack of freedom of speech, all these different things. So they completely manipulated their PGA Tour members, and within 2 years, completely backstabbed them, and they've missed out on millions. I don't know how Rory was never made an official offer, so I hope that they don't take a stance that, you know, any players that were received an official contract, that they'll kind of come up with some portion of it, because Rory was so loyal that he didn't even consider it. And I think they should be compensated somehow. I think they will be. So my take is that the top players on the PGA Tour are going to receive some sort of bonus. I don't think it's all going to be a lump sum. I don't think they're going to relate it to offers from the LIV Tour. I think they're going to say, guys, like, we got to make you happy. We got to make you whole. You're a big part of our tour. So we're going to give you 25 million a year, according to, you know, social status. And we're going to give you $1 million signing bonus to go to Team Callaway or to Team TaylorMade. And we're going to start a new chapter of the PGA Tour that's a team-based event. It'll be this individual type of tournaments that we've always been doing. But then we're going to have this sort of team subtotal going on, sort of like the Formula One format. Maybe we'll have 10 teams. Each team has seven golfers or six golfers. You know, top four golfers count. I'm just making this all up in my head, but top four golfer scores count towards a total score for the team. Then there's going to be a score leaderboard. There's going to be bonuses paid out for teams that win. There's going to be a season-long race for constructors' championship, so to speak. You're going to have all the golf brands and Team Nike. You're going to have Team FootJoy. You're going to it, like, and there's going to be so much money involved. There's going to be more sponsors at a corporate team level as opposed to everybody signing their own sponsors. There's going to be team promotional events, I'm sure. You know, Team TaylorMade shows up to Calgary, Alberta, Canada. I'm going to be, you know, heading over to the Saddle Dome to, you know, watch a big hurrah-rah thing, and they're going to make a bunch of money on tickets. Like, this is going to, the game is going to explode in a new way. And I think it, the players will sort of accept that they forfeited those offers. And that they're going to make this money up, and the tour commissioner, whether it's Jay Monahan or if he steps away, whoever steps in, is going to figure out a way to make it whole on a one by one basis for the top 150 golfers in the world.
Makes sense. I mean, independently of the PIF and the Saudi, obviously the Saudi money there, independently of it, that concept to me of what you just described and you articulated it perfectly is like that is good for the game. I believe that that kind of like that takes the PGA Tour and the game of golf into more of what say the NFL or the NBA does. And we've seen the growth of those two leagues and the popularity of those games grow. Since guys like David Stern, Roger Goodell, Adam Silver's continued what David Stern has, did and everything like that. So anyway, I mean, personally, and a lot of people could disagree, because of course you've got like, you'll always have purists and people who don't want change. And I respect that too, but I do think that would be very, very exciting for golf. And it'd be interesting to see what happens. So what do you think? I mean, we could probably spend a lot more time talking about what we think might happen in the game of golf, and maybe we'll do that on another day. But as you've synthesized all this information, do you think it'll have an impact on cards? And if so, what do you think that impact will be overall, and even just on like a golfer by golfer type of scenario?
So I think it's going to be golfer by golfer, but what it does is it opens the door for those guys who did migrate over to the LIV Tour to save face in the collector community. I do think there's going to be some kind of ill feelings in terms of collectors. I think the players, other than like a few here and there, like Rory kind of has resentment towards some of them, especially like Patrick Reed, for example, guys who were involved in the lawsuit against the PGA Tour, but guys like Dustin Johnson, Sergio Garcia, who said, you know what, PGA Tour, you're right. I'm a de facto, I'm going to forfeit my card. You know, you have every right to ban me. I'm making this financial decision. I want to play nice. I don't want to put up a fight. So I think it's going to be golfer by golfer basis, how they handled the situation between PGA and LIV, how aggressive they were with saying, this isn't fair, I should be allowed to play wherever the hell I want, blah, blah, blah. So Bryson DeChambeau, unfortunately, was one of those guys who was a little outspoken. Patrick Reed, there was, I think, 11 of them who had signed up on a class action lawsuit against the PGA Tour. However, I think just speaking generally, I think a lot of this is going to kind of blow over. I think a couple of years from now, we're going to say, oh yeah, that was a bit crazy, but we'll forget about the details. We're not going to hold grudges about individual players. And I think what it does is it opens the door for LIV players who might go back and play some PGA Tour events and show up at majors and maybe earn those spots if there's going to be team events in the future on the PGA Tour to kind of earn their way back into the hobby. And I'm going to say a little bit of an I told you so. I didn't see it coming this way. I had no idea that PIF was going to buy the PGA. I didn't expect it to happen this quickly. But I've been collecting Bryson DeChambeau and Matthew Wolff. And I've been doing it because I believe in them. I think they're fantastic golfers. I think they're so innovative. Matthew Wolff has the funkiest, weirdest swing, but he makes it work. And he's just enjoyable to watch. Bryson is nicknamed the Scientist. He put on 40 pounds and hit it further than anybody ever has in history. He lost the weight recently. He talks about air density. He has single length irons with fat grips. He does all the experimentation. It's just so interesting to hear about and watch. So I kind of kept collecting these guys as a collector, not as an investor, thinking, I think this is going to blow over. Again, I didn't predict it to happen this quickly or in this way, but I thought 5 years down the line, these two guys who are in their 20s are not going to be that old. They're still going to be in their 20s or early 30s. And, I felt like PGA and LIV were eventually going to figure this out and play nice. And I didn't think these guys would be resigned to only playing LIV events. I knew there'd be a way that they'd end up on the world stage. And if not, maybe they'd still qualify for some majors and show up and be on the top of the leaderboard and still kind of make a splash in the golfing world. So I was collecting those guys. And I think Bryson is a perfect example. He was up at the top of the leaderboard I think he had the lead after the first round at the PGA. He was in the mix. He was in the mix yesterday at the first round of the Open. So I think if Matthew Wolff or Bryson DeChambeau can, have some success, their cards could become investable again.
Yeah, I think that's a good take. And very, very good vision by you to just go ahead and do that and just kind of buy the golfers that you like and that you believe in regardless. I think like stuff does blow over in sports all the time. It's very performance driven as well. Like, I mean, obviously like it's hard to predict performances and it's almost impossible to predict like these types of business deals, but good work by you. And I think like even with Brooks Koepka, it's like, we saw that how well he's played in the majors so far this year is a good example of like, okay, well, in the collector community, are we going to ignore him for some reason? Like, I mean, he really only has the SI for kids card, I think, but we talked about that on an earlier episode where, you know, depending on what cards these guys have, golfer by golfer, this idea that it seems like they're all kind of coming together and it's going to work out sooner rather than later. And you mentioned the U.S. Open. So are you ready to go there? Are you ready to talk about
what? Yeah, for sure.
All right, cool.
So we can make this quick. I mean, it's U.S. Open week. Nowhere near as important as the Canadian Open in the grand scheme of things. No, I'm just kidding. But, but seriously, the U.S. Open is played in L.A. Country Club for the first time. It seems like the course is a bit easier than a typical U.S. Open setup. Really low scoring. Ricky Fowler shot eight under par overnight lead, and that is the lowest score to par ever tied for the lowest score to par ever shot at a U.S. Open. So Ricky Fowler goes into the clubhouse. Everybody else is kind of hanging around, even some minus ones, twos, threes, and fours. And then Xander Schauffele, who's 12 holes behind him or whatever, just says to somebody, "Hold my beer," and goes ahead and matches him at a 62 minus eight. So Xander and Ricky had the overnight lead. It's pretty cool because both of them don't have Upper Deck cards. So for them in the hobby, you're really just looking for their Sports Illustrated for Kids rookie cards. We don't need to necessarily dive into the details, but for those of you who are interested, you know, check those out on eBay. Ricky cards, I remember watching a PSA 10 Sports Illustrated for Kids rookie selling for less than $100. I imagine those are going to be in the multiple hundreds, if not more, if he were to, I mean, heck, it'll probably be multiple hundreds of dollars if just by, you know, tying the U.S. Open record for the lowest score to par. And if he has like a reasonable rest of the week, if he were to win, I think his value, his stock would go through the roof. Same thing with Xander, phenomenal golfer, but has been kind of like falling into the shadows in recent year and a half, 2 years. His name doesn't come up a ton, but he's still playing good golf, and yeah, he's got a good chance this weekend. Rory's in the mix. Rory, of course, has lots of good cards from the early 20 teens. Yeah, anything you want to talk about on the U.S. Open?
Not really. I mean, I do see Dustin Johnson, another live guy. There he is right there, five under, tied for fifth. So, yeah, before we get into the top five ways to make money flipping golf cards, Evan Bell, I would love to play golf with you. That would be great. Next time I'm in Richmond. I did shoot 75 the day that I saw the live PGA move. So I was.
How many breakfast balls did you have, Paul?
How many breakfast balls?
How many mulligans?
I want to say did I take a mulligan? I may have taken one mulligan. Okay. So my scores are, you know, like, so basically my golf trip was I played 4 days in a row of 18 holes with friends of mine from college, which was amazing. I haven't done anything like that in a while. And I had the low round on Friday. So that was like a true score because it was like a competition thing. And it was an 86. That's typically where I am, 84 to 87 type of player. Then after those 4 days, I played 3 days in a row with my parents. And so the scores with my parents were 78, 75, and then a 40. I only played nine the last day, so 41. So I think what it was, Mike, was there's no pressure playing with my parents.
That's exactly. I was going to say your buddies are ribbing you saying, come on.
Yeah. There's absolutely no pressure. So the scores were much lower and there were some gimme putts. So, you know, like I didn't like really have to putt out or anything. And then, I don't know. I forget what I was going to say. It doesn't matter about my golf, but anyway, I'd love to play with Evan. That'd be fun. Let's talk about the top five ways to make money flipping golf cards. But I want to make sure, okay, I want to ask you about something real quick before we get into that.
Mm-hmm.
So one, there's a couple things from the audience real quick. So, and then we'll wrap the show with your top five ways, because I know everyone's real excited about that. Somebody from Facebook, Trey Kegley, who I believe is a listener and a member of the Facebook group, personal messaged me about, because I talk about SI for kids cards. I have been talking about it all the time since the whole Victor Wembanyama thing. And it's very relevant to golf cards, right? So he texted me about a golfer from Texas Tech. And I want to know if you're familiar with a guy named Ludwig Aberg from Texas Tech. Are you familiar with this person?
No, actually, no.
Okay. Trey Kegley says, this guy is the real deal. When he gets a sports card, get it. And okay. I'm thinking SI for kids. And he says he will win in the PGA quickly. First PGA university golfer to earn a tour card immediately. Finished 25th at the RBC, his debut 7 under. So anyway, just interesting note from the audience. And then good to see Mark Drzezinski in the chat again. Good to see you. He was on the Sports Card Strategy show earlier this week. He says, not really a golf question, but how do you store your PC cards in top loaders divided in the cardboard boxes or slabs? Mike, you take this one, man, because you have a PC. I don't. I sell
it. Okay, so here's some basketball cards as an example. Mostly just top loaded. Some that are just crappy, you know, low end cards, not even top loaded. I would say just top load everything, put them into one of these shoebox type 1800 counts. Same thing with graded cards. I'm not going to pull one, but it's the same type of box, just taller, and then it fits slabs. And then to be honest, I don't have a proper system. Like, I've got, you know, PC cards in top loaders. I've got PC cards in card savers to save some space. I've got PC cards in magnetic one touches. A little bit of everything.
Yeah, Mike's got a baby on the way on Monday. So he's definitely not thinking as much about how he's storing his PC, but that's a good question. One thing I'll say is, even though I joke that I don't have a PC, it's not entirely true, but it's pretty much 100% accurate. But one thing I did, most of my cards are graded by PSA, the ones that I have. And so I bought a binder from Ultra Pro, and the Ultra Pro makes very cheap. They make binder pages that fit 4 PSA slabs per page. And for the first time, I went ahead and got some of those, and I actually really like them. And the reason I wanted to go with the binder is because I want to be able to, I don't have that many cards. And so like one or two binders I could carry around, I can keep them in my office organized, and then I could take them to a card show and I could easily display them without having to like move them around a bunch. Like, they sit in the binder, and I kind of really like that move. So that's
my, I absolutely think that's a great play. I saw those at first from Carlson Cards on YouTube. He just started a podcast and he does a bunch of grading and stuff. I would like to look into that maybe once I have more time on my hands, because I think that's cool. I have way too many cards for that to kind of make sense. But where it might make sense for me, for example, is my Diamond Relic set. You know, if the pages can handle the thicker PSA slabs, maybe, because that's only like 24 cards. So maybe it's 6 pages deep and I can flip through, look at all my Diamond Relics. Same thing with my, you know, Cosmic golfers from Goodwin Champions, that set. I'm aiming to get all of those in PSA 10. Just throw them in a binder. That'd be a cool way to keep them safe and show them off. Another thing I forgot to mention, because you mentioned about card shows. So this is a Plano ammo box for hunting, or nice. Like they call it a field box. I paid like $17 Canadian, so like $11 US. So when you think about that compared to like a Zion case, which is like $80 to $100 US, $12 is pretty damn good. And it does have a little hole here so you can lock it so people can't get in there. Got a handle so you can carry it around. You can easily fit, I want to say, maybe 20 or more PSA slabs.
Let's go. And business. New business, you and I. We're going to buy a bunch of those, slap Golf Card Strategy Show stickers on them.
I honestly was thinking about it. I'll tell you why I can't do it in a sec, but so here's like, if they fit perfectly, just like, look at that. Yeah. And there's barely any wiggle room, maybe a little bit. And the other cool thing is that Ship My Cards, when they send you a shipment home, they give you these boxes that are sort of like the, you know, Ultra Pro boxes, wherever you buy from like your local card shop. Except they're big enough. It's kind of like a PSA box that that you would get, kind of like this one.
Yep.
So, but the Ship My Cards ones, they look nice and they fit perfectly the inside dimensions of this thing. So for old, you know, really high end cards, I would just keep them in my Ship My Cards box.
That's cool.
So that they can't wiggle around. They're perfectly snug, and then just put that box inside my little gun ammo box. And it's amazing. So if you have, you know, want to go to a card show, carry a nice, easy, lightweight thing with 20 slabs to buy, sell, trade. It's
love that.
Really cool system.
That's what our guy Chad Gill says he uses in the comments here. So I love doing the show with Mike because he adds so much more value. Just like he's amazing at golf cards, but he's also a great collector and has all these other tips. So good
stuff. And I'll say, so the reason that I can't do that, maybe you could in the US, but I paid $17 Canadian. The way I found out about it was from a US Facebook group, and somebody posted about these gun boxes. They're $5.99 in the US.
What's the name of them again?
I don't know if it's the same brand. Mine's called Plano, P-L-A-N-O. But you just look up like locking field box or something
Plano
like that.
Plano ammo box. I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, now, you get called out in these Facebook groups, but like, I mean, what an interesting move, right? I mean,
yeah,
you'd have to upgrade them, I think, to make it make sense, because otherwise people will just go ahead and buy them from Plano. And I'm not trying to
more than just off. A sticker. You'd want to.
Yeah. You got to do something. And I'm not trying to rip people off. I'm actually totally kidding. But that's a great move. Good tip. Chad does it. Good stuff. All right. Let's do it, Mike. Let's get into it.
Five
ways to make money.
Paul, do you just have 5 minutes left, or do you have 10 minutes? Or
I have however long that you need to get through this.
All right, let's rip through it.
Take your time.
So when I made this list, I honestly wanted to be a little bit cheeky, to be honest. I wanted to make all five of them sort of collector focused. And, you know, say how you could make a little bit of money. But I decided not to be fully cheeky. I just had a few cheeky comments to make. But what I did instead is I made my top five into different categories. So number one would be how to make money with prospects and breakouts. Number two, hometown heroes. Number three, stars. Four, goats. And five, any player. So any player is probably the one that most people are interested in, because it's a little bit more of like a tried and true method that could work with any sport, any whatever. But let's get into number one, which is prospects and breakouts. In golf, card collecting, it follows the same kind of ebbs and flows of every sport when it comes to seasonality. So for golf, the fall is the quietest time. And in the spring, it is kind of like the start of a golf season. Technically, it starts in the fall, but like the key players aren't as interested. They want to take a bit of a break then. The tournaments aren't as esteemed, and the majors don't start until April. So the reason I'm categorizing this as prospects and breakouts is because you can make money by doing your research into where the majors are, who qualified, and pick some names of guys who have cards who might not who might be kind of slow, like somebody you wouldn't put $100 on to win outright. However, if you buy their cards and they have like a fair showing, then they can at least hold value. If they get a top 10 and their name's being talked about on the broadcasts, you know, their stock might start to go up. I'm thinking of, the one I have in my mind is Keegan Bradley. And I made this play last year because the U.S. Open was played in Boston. And Keegan Bradley is a Boston hometown boy. And so I just thought, like, he's qualified. He'll be playing in the U.S. Open. And his card, he had Leaf cards. And I got, like, a really nice-looking numbered out of 50 on-card auto. and it had like a refractor look to it. I think Leaf calls that prismatic. And it was just a beautiful looking card. I got it for like $11 US plus shipping. And honestly, I bought it. I'm going to pretend like I bought it to make this play, this flip, but I bought it because I just kind of wanted a Keegan Bradley card, and to get it for, you know, $15 shipped, I thought, heck, if somebody else wants this more than me sometime down the road, I'm sure I could get more than $15 for it because it looks so nice. Especially if, you know, he has a showing at the US Open or any other tournament. And so turns out he was contending the first couple days, had the lead at one point. The crowds were going crazy for him, almost like any of the Canadians at the Canadian Open. It had that kind of feel to it. Every time Keegan stepped up, people were cheering his name more so than like the big stars. And so as a viewer, people at home were like, who's this Keegan Bradley? Or, you know, I know him, but you start to get some endorphins whenever Keegan's name comes up. So anyways, I had it graded by SGC, got a 10 with a 10 auto, and I sold it for like $120 US. So bought for like 15 shipped, sold for 120 shipped. You know, it's just an example where he's not necessarily a prospect, but he's got a possibility to break out. And he did that weekend. I sold at the right time. I'm sure nobody would want to pay more than $60 or $70 for that card a few weeks later, but, you know, still has higher value than when I, you know, bought the card originally.
Okay, good stuff. So you can prospect based on who's played well, maybe who has some who hasn't really had a big win, but there's murmurs that they're playing well, and maybe there's an event coming up where there's like a would be a extra special marker for them related to personal ties to a tournament coming up.
Exactly, like for the Canadian Open, why not buy all of the Adam Hadwin cards, the Mike Weir cards, the Nick Taylor cards? Just buy them in advance if they're cheap, and then if nobody wants them, I'm sure you could sell them, put them on an auction that ends on Sunday, and if none of them are in contention, there's still collectors watching the tournament who are like, oh, that's kind of cool, Adam Hadwin didn't win but he got a top 20, and you know, it'd be cool to own one of his cards for $10. Like you know, people are thinking about it at that tournament. You know, another example would be the Masters, guys like older guys like Bernhard Langer. He's got some cards from like 2001. If you could buy like a higher end Bernhard Langer card for under $30, if he somehow becomes the first guy, 63 year old or however old that guy is, to, you know, be on the front page of the leaderboard going into Saturday at the Masters, which out of anybody in the world, he would have that chance. You know, you could potentially double the value for all the people paying attention to him at that time.
Yeah. He won the Masters in 1985 and 1993. So I remember when he won it in 93, I was 12, and I don't remember it in 85. I was only three, I guess, at that point. But anyway, love that.
That's almost 40 years ago.
Really cool. Yeah.
And actually, as recent as a couple of years ago, he kind of, that was starting to play out. Like after, I think it was after the first round, he went like a couple under par and was in that top 10 kind of area.
Yeah.
And the announcers were, the commentators were saying like, you know, Bernhard is the only guy who could be doing this in his 60s.
Crazy.
He's keeping up with, you know, Brooks Koepka and all these other guys. So, you know, he's not the only one. I mean, Sergio Garcia, who's a lot younger, in his 50s, early 50s, you know, he's only even 48 or 49. I don't remember how old.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So Sergio's a guy who's got one or two green jackets and could, you know, if he's quiet all year playing on, pardon me, he's 43. That's it. So he's pretty young. He's got probably have a good chance. And if nobody's paying attention to him, he's just, you know, making a crap ton of money on the live tour all year round. And he shows up to the Masters and somehow shoots lights out for a couple of days. A Sergio card could easily double in price.
All right. I got some ideas for what my top five could be, but I'm going to do my research. We're only on number one for you. So like, talk about hometown heroes. You kind of hit on though. Is there anything
I did
to talk about hometown heroes?
Hometown heroes, the Keegan Bradley in Boston, the Canadians at the Canadian Open. But what I really wanted to talk about here, aside from that kind of strategy, is, I guess this is the cheeky part. I mean, if you collect who you like, you collect your hometown heroes, you collect the guys on your team, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
If they show up, you'll know them. You'll know their schedule, you might not have it memorized, but like if there's a big event coming up, you might know whether or not that guy you like is playing or not. You've kind of got a little bit of inside info compared to the average collector. So you can prepare in advance. And if it doesn't work out, worst case scenario, they come last place, you can keep that card because you like him. And it goes back to the old saying, collect what you like. Look for cards that you like the look of. Don't just buy something because everybody talks about it. If you don't like the look of a card, it's like artwork. Why would you buy artwork you don't like the look of?
Yeah.
So buy the guys you like, buy the exact cards you like. If they drop in value, so be it. You didn't lose money. You just get a card that you like. That's it. If they have a showing, you can make money, like Nick Taylor or what's his name? Keegan Bradley. And I just, at the end of the day, I believe in like the value of the process. I know sports card investing is kind of the theme of the show, but for me, if I spend $100 on a card that I love and I prefer not to sell it and its value drops down to 50, my total value hasn't dropped down to 50 because I've enjoyed owning that card. I've had it on display. It's been sitting in my shoebox that I like to fondle and flip through. So it's not only, I didn't lose $50 of value.
Yeah.
I'm not, totally. Not even going to try to quantify
that. I 100% agree with that. And I love that you bring that up.
Let's move on to stars.
Yeah.
So when it comes to stars, I'm talking about Dustin Johnson, John Rahm, Justin Thomas, Colin Morikawa. I'm even my guy, Bryson DeChambeau, like guys who are headlining events, but aren't really in the GOAT conversation. They're kind of like modern players who still have a chance to improve their legacy, but have already kind of like proved themselves, earned spots into all of the majors so that, you know, there's not much risk in them, like not being able to play, things like that. So these kind of players, I personally don't believe in looking for their like low end stuff, or like base autos, or, you know, I believe in looking for low numbered cards, rare cards, you know, vintage stuff that's graded high, essentially stuff that a collector would want. You know, I don't want a Jack Nicklaus. Well, Jack Nicklaus gets into the GOAT conversation, but you know, Gary Player as an example. I don't want a Gary Player rookie that's like a PSA 4 or 5 or 6 even. If I'm deciding that I want to invest in a Gary Player rookie, which, by the way, there's like four different cards or something like that, that, you know, you could argue which one's his true rookie, but they're all from like the, I forget, 50s or 60s or something, kind of around the Jack Nicklaus time. And, you know, I would want the one that's top 100, right? I don't know what grade that would be. Maybe that's a PSA 8 or something, but I want the one that, because how many golf card collectors are there in the world like me?
Yeah.
Is there 40 of us, 500 of us? I don't know, but I want the
Take the number that's in your Facebook group, the golf cards and memorabilia. That'll give you a good idea.
There you go. So out of the 1500 golf card collectors in the world, and that includes probably some people who are just, you know, wanted to sell off some golf cards that their dad had or whatever. But out of the 1500 golf card collectors in the world, I want the card that, you know, only the top 10% of us owns or less.
Makes sense.
So I don't want to go looking for, you know, a cool Tiger Woods card that, you know, has 500 PSA 10s or whatever. I want something that's a bit more rare. And that's one of the reasons that I like these cosmic cards. Did I have any of them here? Yeah, here's one for an example. Colin Morikawa. So this is from his rookie year in 2021, Goodwin Champions. It's numbered out of 99. And I just love these because there's only 99 of them, right? So out of the 1,500 golf card collectors in the world, not all of us can own this card. And I own multiple copies. I own like three copies of this card. So there's only 97 other or 96 others for others to collect. So that's not even considered low numbered necessarily, but you know, low numbered, rare, low pop.
Good stuff. Okay, love that. Then you've got GOAT. as your number four?
GOAT. And I could have said GOATs because, you know, Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods, there's a bit of a discussion there. But I mean, I believe Tiger's the GOAT and a lot of people agree with me. So GOAT is singular.
Okay.
So as with many top whatever lists for cards, anything related to golf, Tiger Woods gets his own category. So with Tiger, the thought process I had for this exercise, which is how to make money, I'm going the complete 180 from number three that I just said, which was, you know, low pop, whatever, for stars. When it comes to GOAT, you look for something iconic. So 2001 Upper Deck rookie card, 1996 Sports Illustrated for Kids rookie card, 2001 SPA rookie autograph numbered out of 900. Like, I'm sure there's like a dozen iconic Tiger Woods cards. And if you're looking to make money, of course you could still do the stars approach and look for low pop, low serial number, whatever. And they could be from any year, any set. And there's a collector that wants it, because I want those Tiger Woods cards. But the truly liquid stuff with a GOAT are going to be his iconic stuff. I'm not saying go out and buy them. Don't go out today and start looking up Tiger Woods iconic cards and just assume you can make money on them. You should be looking at the trends, you know, the market movers or card ladders or whatever, you know, price history app or service that you choose to subscribe to, and pay attention to what kind of ebbs and flows there are. And you could treat it almost like day trading. And Tiger Woods has a very clear trend to just spike in value whenever his name comes up in the news. And right now, Tiger's in a bit of a lull. People don't know if he's retiring. He said he's going to kind of focus on just playing the majors, but he didn't play in the US Open. So is he going to, you know, it's kind of up in the air. So, you know, now might be a good time to buy his PSA 10 2001 Upper Deck rookie card. However, on top of this day trading based on hype and announcements, you want to overlap that with the golf season, just like every other sport. So although right now could be a good time in terms of him being in a bit of a lull, people not talking about him as much, it's the freaking middle of the major seasons. Yeah. So wait until after the US Open, and not immediately after, but give it a few weeks afterwards. Maybe even wait until the PGA Championship or Tour Championship wraps up, where they give out the FedEx Cup. And that happens in September. And then once you get into October, man, people aren't paying attention to golf. People are, you know, taking a bit of a break from it. So I would say where the crosshairs meet between a Tiger's in a lull and you're in the off season, you could buy his PSA 10 rookie card and then just kind of hold on to it. And if it starts spiking around the Masters or just shortly after that, or if he gets another car accident or his girlfriend that he broke up with starts chasing him with a golf club, then, you know, then sell those cards.
Yep. Tiger's got to be on the list of ways to make money. And I'm thinking that that's probably going to be a lot of people's number one. So that's great advice there. And then number five, I'm really excited to hear your number five here, just grinding on any player. Tell me about that. The grind.
I mean, the grind encompasses a lot. Card collector too, Ryan from Card Talk, he does a good job kind of talking about this and applauding it when he sees others doing it. It involves a big investment of time, but it's buying lots of cards so that you're not paying market price for a single. So you buy a batch of cards and then you put in the elbow grease to sort, to find the diamond in the rough, to get it graded, to sell it yourself instead of sending it to a consigner, throw it up on social medias or people, you know, reach out, hey, do you like this card? Do you want it? If that's not working, throw it up on your own eBay rather than someone else's, so you don't miss out on, you know, consigner fees, or so you get to miss out on consigner fees. But, you know, if you can social sell rather than, or take it to a show rather than doing eBay, you save on eBay fees. So pretty much putting thought, putting effort, putting time, grading, doing all these steps, flipping through dollar boxes, you know, staying up late to put an extra time into your grading submission, actually, you know, use your breath and wipe down the card and thoroughly inspect it. And if there's a little hair sticking out, you know, flatten it down with, you know, a little wet fingertip. Like you there's a lot you can do in this hobby to get a step ahead of the next guy who's trying to, you know, make money on his cards.
That's one of the things I love about it. And Chad Gill in the chat uses pantyhose. I've started to use some pantyhose as well.
I don't want to hear what you do on the weekend, Paul.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, so I love the hobby because you can prospect so easily on what people want to buy. It's so easy to figure out who people want to buy. I mean, literally, people will put them in their Twitter profile, or, you know, joining a Facebook group of Ken Griffey Jr. collectors, and then just figuring out, like, what, you know, I know this is the golf show, but you could do the same thing in golf, where you can literally just join a Facebook group and ask people who they're looking for, or just scrolling through and seeing all the data right there. There's not many you know, a lot of us treat this like a business. I mean, I think even people who are collectors and don't want to admit it, they do treat it like a business, and they do want to at least make enough money so that they can fund their hobby or fund their PC. And so whether or not you're looking to profit, or whether or not you're looking to just kind of make money to fund your PC, there's no other business where you can really, like, have that much access to transparent information for what your target audience wants. And so to me, part of the grind, I'll just add this, is looking at, like, doing research around who do people want to buy, and then going and figuring out, you know, whether it's buying an entire collection or buying a lot of cards, like you talked about, and doing the sorting yourself and trying to find those golfers. I love it. I love the grind. I personally think that the grind is my number one favorite out of all your top five ways to make money. One quick question from the audience. Audience member turned analyst at nooffseason.com, Chad Gill, says, Mike, how do you feel about telling people to buy the 2001 Upper Deck sealed box, typically 125 to 150 a box, and then send in, I'm assuming he's saying send in the Tiger to grade. Is that
I read this question, I think maybe Chad could correct me if you're wrong, but I think maybe he's saying to actually have the box graded, maybe, because yeah, you can grade packs. I'm not sure about grading boxes. Maybe it would end up in a giant plastic.
Yeah, that's our resident PSA expert. So Chad, what do you clarify this? I think he's talking about the Tiger card, but yeah, maybe you can grade the box. I don't know.
So the box itself, as he said, is selling for 125 to 150. I see guys maybe daily, maybe a few times a month, trying to sell this 2001 Upper Deck Golf sealed box. There's a few guys out there with, you know, a hoard of them, and then they'll just throw it up saying, hey, I got 10 of these boxes, $200 each, discount for multiples. Yeah, so he's talking about grading the box. So I don't know if PSA does that. Maybe they do. That'd be a pretty gnarly plastic setup to actually encase a box. I've heard of, like, I forget the name of those companies that do a wrap, and they'll like wrap the box and put their seal on it saying, you know, this is a authentic sealed box, and we've inspected it, and to the best of our knowledge, it's, you know, it's authentic. So, okay. If PSA has a way of grading boxes, I don't think it's a terrible play. I think the thing about wax is that it's the only thing in our hobby that diminishes over time in terms of supply. The Tiger Woods 2001 Upper Deck rookie card, I mean, it's 22 years old, but the population keeps getting bigger. So to give you an example, I had, yeah, BBCE, so they do a wrap. I don't know if they'll actually encase it in plastic, but 22 years old, and I had a grading submission. A friend of mine had he bought a 2001 Upper Deck rookie card from eBay. It looked pretty clean. He said, hey, can I throw this into your PSA submission? I said, sure. He got a gem. He got a PSA 10. He paid $40 for it on eBay. Nice. So the population keeps climbing over a year, whereas sealed wax declines over a year. So the supply is, you know, going to dwindle. However, 2001 Upper Deck Golf was massively produced. Like, I'm talking, I don't know the number, but you could just kind of get a feel from the PSA 10 pop report for Tiger Woods. We looked at it before. I forget it. It's either like 8,000 or like 20,000. It's kind of one of those numbers, but either of those, it's still a massive number of PSA 10s for an iconic rookie card. And again, you have to think how many collectors are there that want that card. I mean, I'm sure there's that many people that want that card, but they all can get it. So its price isn't going to rise from that kind of demand. Yeah, and I've seen this sealed box all over the place. You could go on eBay any day of the week and find one that you could purchase. So if you're going to do this play, you have to have patient money and just have it wrapped, put it in the closet, and have it sit there for decades, I'm going to say. Not months or years, but I'm going to say decades before you really see a return.
I know Chad's a collector and an investor, and he flips to fund his PC. And I'm wondering if this is a PC play for Chad or if it's something that he's looking to flip. But I like your breakdown of that, Mike. I think to me, it's more of kind of a cool thing to have a graded box than and more of a PC thing than like actually trying to flip it. I'd be interested to see if Chad comments, if he agrees on that. But I'm looking up the pop report now at PSA. Are there really like, so in the, I mean, I tried to just look up the pop report for the card number one that we were talking about, but it looks like there's a lot of Upper Deck Tiger. This reminds me of like the 2003 LeBron stuff where there's just so many. Is that what they did? Like, all of these in that box or
correct? So 2001 Upper Deck Golf, the number one, which is in the base list, is Tiger Woods rookie card. But there's insert checklists as well. There's leaderboard. There's match play. There's victory march. There's like a half a dozen, you know, base insert checklists, and Tiger has a card in each of those. And in addition to that, there's the Tiger Tails set.
Okay.
So the Tiger Tails set is a set of something like 30 cards with sort of an iconic picture of Tiger on them. They're actually pretty nice looking cards with some like gold foiling on them, but they're not rare. There was actually a Tiger Tails card in every single pack. So the reason they did that is so that, you know, everybody who's ripping this is like, oh my God, I got a Tiger Woods.
And it's from 2000 packs.
It's from 2001. So it's a variant. It's a type of Tiger Woods rookie card. The reason they don't maintain any value, I mean, you could get them a dime a dozen, or you can get the whole Tiger Tails set for $10 to $20. And it's because they're in every single pack. So when you look at that list, they're all kind of desirable cards. Like, I own all of them. But you know, I paid a dollar each or less. So, and everybody else who wants one could do the same.
Okay. Real quick. So Chad's actually doing the same thing I'm doing right now. I wonder if he's looking my screen or we just both think the exact same way now, since we've been working together for a while. So to put a bow on the show, what I wanted to do, and Chad says total PC item on the sealed box, by the way, that's what I thought. Okay. Mike, we've been doing this at nooffseason.com a lot for the premium content. So I'd want everybody to go check out, get a free 30-day trial at nooffseason.com and see what we've been doing there for the premium stuff. But, what I was doing here is like, okay, so I'm looking at Sports Card Investor because they just have these nice pages that allow me to do this real fast. So like, you could buy the base card in theory for less than $20 US. You could grade it for $19 per card. So you're about $40 into the card. If you get a 9, in theory, you could sell it for 60 minus, obviously, if you're selling it on eBay, minus the fees. But then in the 10, so you're looking at a break even on the 9, and you're looking at a profit of, let's say, $150 US roughly on the 10. And then what we do is we look at the pop count. So I think Chad's running the numbers there too. So like, out of 36,000 total graded cards of that card, it looks like you're almost 60% likely to get a 9 or a 10. So if you were to go out and buy 20 of these for a bulk submission at $19 a card and grade all 20, looks like you, I mean, we'd have to run the numbers, but you would be likely to profit on that.
So to give you numbers from my experience, I think in the last couple of years, I've bought 5 copies of this card ungraded. One of them was abysmal condition, just ratted right up. Another one was maybe a little better than that, but still something like maybe a 7. Two of them were solid, maybe 8s.
Yeah.
And one of them was borderline. It was definitely a 9. Could have maybe got a gem 10. So, and that, so that's out of 5. So, I guess you have to multiply that by.
Here's what I think. I'm glad you said that, because you're taking me down a notch to where I need to say this to the audience. I think that if you run the numbers on a card from 2001, you're not going to get the same gem rate in 2023. Because it's 22-year-old card. If we were talking about a like an Anthony Edwards card from 2020, you probably would get the similar gem rate, because you're looking at this. Just eras of cards have changed a couple different times since 2001. Whereas if you're buying a card from, say, 2019, 2020, 2021, or 2022, you could probably use this data. But because this card's from 2001, if you were to go out and buy a raw card now, you're probably looking at a situation where, like Mike, speaking from personal experience, you'd probably get more of that type of a scenario. Where even Mike, if you would have bought 20 of those, my guess is that maybe your best would have been maybe you would have got a couple 9s, 5 8s, and the rest like 4 5s and 6, just because it's from 2001. I mean, it's 22 years ago. So,
well, and the way I look at it is, out of 20 cards, I might only have 3 or 4 that might even look like they're worth grading.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
You know, you could work out the math. Maybe it does make sense. And you know what? I'm actually not shooting this idea down. I do actually think, but so many guys are looking at this card. It just seems like you have to kind of luck out getting a gem, like my buddy did. He only bought 1 copy and it gemmed, you know, lucky guy. I bought 5 and one of them might have gemmed, but I ended up selling it raw for $63 Canadian. So something like, what is that? $50 US. Because it was so nice, and I know the guy that I sold it to planned on grading it, and he was just more open to taking that risk of grading and seeing what he gets than I was.
Here's the other play. So it's the SGC 10 versus the PSA 10, where you've got almost enough of a difference. Like, so you've got 170 plus the $20 grading fee. You're going to pay some shipping and taxes and stuff like that. So that's going to wipe out some of it. Then if you cross over, so you're really only profiting maybe $30, $20 or $30 on a $170 purchase. The other play would be like an SGC 9.5. So I would say, if you come across, I'm alluding to what my top 5 ways to make money flipping golf cards might be. And one of them might be, you know, if you're able to find an SGC 9.5 of this card for this price, which is $56 US. Now that's down, $60 from the previous sale. So I doubt that that's necessarily where you'd get that card at. But if you're able to get high solid eye appeal on a SGC 9.5 card, and then cross it over, crack it for a PSA 10. We could do this all day, but Mike, you inspire me. You put out great content. I'm really, really happy to be doing this show with you. This was episode 8. We got to keep it going. What's the number? You got to get to like 10 or something before you're legit. Like, what do they say?
Actually it was in the 20s. A friend of ours, Victor, said, I think it was like 20, like only like 5% of podcasters or podcast shows make it to episode 20. So we've got a dozen more to go until we're in the top 5% of shows.
Let's do it. We can easily do a dozen.
Oh yeah.
Get it on the calendar. Well, Mike, congratulations. Good luck. We'll all be thinking of you in the new addition to your family on Monday. Everybody send Mike and his family positive vibes for the new one, the new Lacusta in the house. and keep us posted on how that goes. And thanks again for your time. Anything else you want to add before we wrap up the show today?
No, man, that's it. I'm contemplating maybe bringing a Tiger Woods car to the hospital and taking a picture of the newborn with his first golf cart or something like that.
That would be outstanding. I would love to see something like that. Well, we're wishing you and the family health and happiness. And everybody, thanks so much for watching and listening to the Golf Card Strategy Show with Mike Lacusta. Check him out on Instagram at golf_card_collector. And then he's one of the top guys on the golf cards and memorabilia Facebook group. So check that out as well. Thanks so much, everybody. Paul Hickey with nooffseason.com for Mike Lacusta signing off. Have a great day.